Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's time for Barbecue Nation with JT. So fire up your grill, light the charcoal, and get your smoker cooking. Now from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, here's JT.
This is an encore.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Nation. I'm JT, along with my co-pilot and co-conspirator there, Ms. Leanne Whippen, along with Dave and Chris and the rest of the people who you don't see very often. We'd like to thank the folks at Painted Hills Natural Beef, beef the way nature intended. Well, we've got a bicon, meaning a barbecue icon, but I couldn't make the word up fast enough. We've got an icon with us today. Excuse me, Byron Chisholm. You all know him from Bad Byron's Butt Rub Incorporated, you might say. And he's been gracious enough to take the time to spend the next hour with us, with Leanne and myself. Byron, welcome, bud.
Yes.
Byron. Glad to be here. Thank you. I've been looking forward to it.
So to start off the top of the show, do you have any real funky stories about Leanne?
Oh!
I don't have any funky stories, but I know we go way back. I got to know her dad a long time ago. My first major barbecue competition was in Tryon, North Carolina. I wore this shirt.
There it is.
There it is. Yeah.
In honor of Leanne and her dad, Mr. Jim Taft. That was a great contest. That was my first major contest I ever did in 1998. And I went back probably 15, 16 times through the years before. The contest finally dismantled, but it was just a wonderful contest. And that's where I met Leanne. And then of course, they would travel together in the early days and all cook together. And that's how I met Leanne a long time ago. So, we've been friends a good while.
Long time.
Yeah. A long time. So Leanne, now turnabout's fair play. Do you have any, before we get into the questioning and the cross examination here, as we do on the show, do you have any stories about Byron?
I remember him being at Blue Ridge, and I think I said earlier that I thought he won first place in all four categories. My mistake, it was only first place in three categories. But I remember being dumbfounded because it always was a very large contest, and I remember him competing like by himself, and I couldn't understand how he could do it all by himself. Even though I did a lot by myself, I mean, I had little helpers, you know, that ran around, but yeah. And I remember him always having his dog with him and bringing honey. And yeah, I just remember being awestruck because everyone said, oh, he's a professional chef. He's a chef. And I was like, oh my God, he's not just a pit master. He's a chef too.
I hung up my white coats.
Yeah.
There you go. What were you cooking on in those days, Byron?
Well, man, different years, different grills, you know, you just keep moving along you're going for something. And if you don't think you find it, you keep getting new grills until you find it, you know? So I learned not to ever sell my grills, because if I ever want it to begin with, I might want it back.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
I just learned to warehousing. But she talked to me, Leanne was talking about how I cook by myself. Well, there's a good reason for it, because when I started marketing Butt Rub, I was traveling freely. I had no friends that could travel freely. I mean, I'm in my 30s, and it's like I don't know anybody that can travel with me. And so I had to learn how to do it by myself, because I was the only one that could go to all these events. I would have some help at different times, different places, and it was messing me up, because unless I had the same help, you know, consistently, it was messing me up. And I'm like, man, I remember cooking 200 covers with just a couple of us in the kitchen. I'm like, golly, I need four boxes. I figured this out. I'm all in on it. The one thing I always needed was a runner, though. And a runner, they always have a million questions for you. So it was a distraction. But, you know, you just deal with what you got. And I was just glad to be doing it.
Yeah.
Did you ever find it where you were at the end of the day, you went, oh my God, why did I take this on all by myself?
No, I didn't have, I got into a rhythm by myself. I actually come to think that I had an advantage, because once I started clicking and I started moving and I started doing it and doing it segue, it's like, you know, I'd look next door and then before people having a meeting about what they're going to do next, well, I've already made three moves by then. So I would get some momentum going. And by the time getting into turning time, I'm fluid, I'm rolling, I'm clicking, and I'm on it. So in a lot of ways, it's a big advantage. Ideally, though, I think the best teams, in my opinion, is a husband and wife. If not a husband and wife, at least two people that work together all the time.
Yes.
Because, you know, you just need a little bit more help, especially running a box. And if you have to take on a volunteer to do that every time, just a lot of distractions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was the toughest part that you thought of, or what did you think was the toughest part when you were competing? Was it just getting there and setting up, or was it, you know, doing the boxes? Was it monitoring the fire, so to speak, all night, or what?
Toughest part for me was mechanical, because there's so many moving parts to your truck, I had a fifth wheel for most of these years. There's so many mechanical things and the grills, and and every time something didn't work, man, it'd throw me into a tailspin, because I'm not very handy and I'm counting on all these things working. You know, as they're all working, I'm okay. As anybody knows who competes, you spend all week getting ready, you know, your meat selection, prepping all your sauces, your injections, all your things you do, and getting the rig ready and serviced and all that. So I'm organized. I can do all that, and I can get to the event. I'm a kind of a amateur trucker. So I can get there, I can get set up, and I'm poised. But when something starts breaking, I get my ass kicked. Fortunately, a lot of the barbecues are handy, and neighbors come around and they kind of help you out, you know, when you can. So.
No, that's true. I have a certain set of skills, but they're not consistent. Some of it's in cooking, some of it's mechanical. Very little in mechanical. Although I ride a mean riding mower, I'll tell you that. I'm good at making lines. I got the Forrest Gump thing down, man. It's a boom.
Love it.
Do you compete anymore? Are you too busy with your company?
No, 2019 was the last year I competed. I had several. I had basically evolved to competing for the international. That's what was driving me. In fact, 2020, I had three international trips planned, and they all got canceled, of course. And then I had a couple of years of a shutdown, you know, we all did. And I got used to not competing. And for the first time since I started, I had a clean break, and I got comfortable not competing. So I had 21 years that I competed. The business is 20, we're in our 26th year now. So, yeah, that's pretty good tenure. I think I just did some rough calculations. Most people, they might compete 10 years. You know, that's kind of some people more, some people less. But 21 years, that's a good tenure. It ran its course. It had run its course a while back. My thing was I was about to want to start doing other things other than competing. And then the first KCBS in Europe was in 2012. It's going to be in Amsterdam. I'm like, whoa, man, KCBS going to Amsterdam. Going to Europe. I'm like, I'm there. I'm like, I don't know who I need to talk to about what and how we're going to do this, but I'm going. And it was beautiful. I had such a great time, such hospitality. They're so excited over there to get started doing that. And they were glad to have an American representative. I was the only one. And then as they started popping them up, I went to as many as I could. And I wound up having a complete set, you know, grill, everything. I fly into Europe. I've got everything I need except person. It was in a friend of mine's garage, you know, tent, tables, chairs, whatever. It was kind of roughing it, but I was seeing countries I've never been to. And that was beautiful. That's what kind of gave me an extended 8 years on top of other domestic, you know, traveling with barbecue.
Yeah.
Did you find that when you were competing outside of the country that it was much different because of the meats you could get your hands on?
Well, at first, yes. And then they figured out real quick how to find suppliers for what they wanted. So they start getting Australian briskets. They start getting prime briskets. They didn't cut pork the way we do with the pork butt and everything. Even the ribs were from real small hogs. There were a lot of challenges at first, but they quickly, when there's a demand, there's a supply. You know, they all got together and there was enough of them where I know this one meat market in Amsterdam, I'd go there, they'd have it all. I'd go through, look at all these Australian briskets. They had all these pork butts from heritage breed hogs. Yeah, so no, it took a while, but a little while, but you know, with the internet and everything else, they knew what products people were winning with. You'd go there and you'd look around the cook sites and you'd see the same products you see in the States, you know, and a lot of them, I don't know, YouTube, whatever, and a lot of them just taking classes. And then a handful of them had been to the U.S. and major events and stuff like that. So they weren't as far behind as might think. And then they caught on real fast. It got real competitive and still is. But anyway, I just love the hospitality. I was always treated so well over there and people were excited to see me. Mm-hmm. You know, I go to a local contest. And it's like, hey, how you doing? How you doing? Over there, it's like, hey, I brought you something. I brought you some beer from my country. You know? Hey, look here. You know, I got these gifts all the time. It's like, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I love Europe. I like to travel anyway. I used to do it for a living. I don't do that anymore, but I love to travel. It's always fun to go places you haven't been, meet the people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And
the thing about the barbecue thing is you're not on the tourist trail. You're amongst the locals in a community somewhere. You know, you look around, there's no tour buses.
Yeah. I mean, right.
You're experiencing, and you know, of course, a lot of people, you know, hey, look, I want to show you here. I want to take you there. And everywhere you go, you look and you're the only one that's not from there. And that's when you know you're in the right place.
Yeah.
Oh, I woke up a few times like that. being the only one there and in the right place, I guess. But
that's another podcast.
Yeah, that's another story and another show. I'll tell you that. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with Byron Chisholm. Sorry, in just a minute. Don't go away. Hey everybody, it's Jeff here. I want to tell you about something really cool. Heritage Steel cookware. I just got mine. I do a lot of cooking, and it's got 5-ply construction stay cool handles. It's titanium strengthened. It's got all the great stuff. Just go to heritagesteel.us and find out more. You'll love it. I guarantee it.
This is an encore.
Welcome back to the nation. I'm JT along with Ms. Leanne Whippin, Hall of Famer there. And we've got Byron Chisholm with us today.
He's newly inducted to the Hall of Fame. Actually, the big ceremony is coming up, right?
That was October. In my script, but yeah, it's good. That's good. Shows you're paying attention. I like that. It's all good. Byron, let's get the obvious out of the way here. What prompted you to go into the rub business?
It was just a natural expression of cooking because I was serious about cooking as a hobby. By the time I graduated from college, I was real serious about it. And I was really trying to find, you know, so what kind of career path I've got. A lot of people were, you know, getting a bunch of suits and moving to Atlanta and Houston, place like that. And I'm like, man, that's just not me. I don't know where I was supposed to be. And anyway, I said, well, you like cooking, you know, you're finally good at something that you could potentially make a living at. So why don't you give it a try, you know? And that's when I started cooking for a living. Now, most people don't graduate from college and just start, you know, become a line cook as their dream job, especially in a seasonal Florida panhandle. but I did. And it's worked out pretty good. I mean, I enjoyed cooking for restaurants. I accepted the challenge and I got better and better and better at it. And I liked it. And I went to culinary school. But all along, and now all this is in our documentary, the Butt Rub Story. And I'll tell you more about that later. But we tell the whole story about how I got into this. But I had a neighbor that taught me how to barbecue. This was 1991. And at that time, Most people just knew how to grill. They, you know, barbecue. And that was a small niche group of people that knew how to do that, really, back then. So he taught me how, and I really fell in love with it. I brought that grill to culinary school in New York, Hyde Park, New York. And, you know, we had seasonal work down in Florida where I was cooking and you know, real nice restaurants. And I was getting real good training there. But I had a lot of downtime. And in that downtime, I spent a lot of time on that grill. So naturally, every component to barbecuing came out of me. You know, this is the way I do baked beans. This is my sauce. You know, I learned about rub because I grew up in Texas and I had some Texas cookbooks. And otherwise, nobody else knew about a rub, not at that time. In the South, we wasn't part of the barbecue, you know, deal. That all came out of Central Texas. So nonetheless, I read about it, made sense. So I came up with my own little salt and pepper blend. Didn't think that much of it. But if, I love the fact that I was using this rub on butts. And then I was sitting there, you know, I'm like, well, I guess this is a butt rub. And I just laughing to myself, you know. Anyway, long story short, when I came out with my own way of doing products, I wanted to give them away as gifts. And to give them away as gifts, I then decided to personalize the jars. And that's where the pig got created. And one thing led to another, but it just looked like it ought to be something that'll be on a grocery store shelf somewhere. And so then I said, well, why not? Why not? You know, why don't I just test the waters and see how people like this stuff? And that's how I got into it.
Do you think that people that are getting into the rub business now, like your rub, Leanne's rub, you know, came from her dad and stuff. I mean, they are, and pardon the pun, they are well-seasoned. They're veteran rubs out there. They've got a marketplace for them. Do you think there's too many rubs getting tossed on the market now? Let me give you an example. You look at, of course, we do a lot of social media with the shows. I see new rubs coming out every day, and they're probably just dandy. You know what I mean? Right. But so many of them, it's like, well, this is Bob's and this is Jill's and this is Ted's. And, you know, this is,
Ted's is kind of spicy.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it's a very competitive at the retail level. It's a very competitive business, especially on store shelves. So,
yeah, well, you know, the way the free market works is, you know, if something's overcrowded and people start dropping off, I mean, it's supply and demand. And, you know, there's, it's kind of like the craft beer business. You know, if you had a good craft beer 15 years ago, man, you had them lined up. You know, you had the only one and, you know, maybe 300 mile radius. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, every little old town has got a craft brewery. And so it's just the best ones will survive. If people that are most committed to getting them off the ground will separate themselves from everybody else. Because a lot of times people have an illusion. It's like, well, I mean, this is great. So I'm going to make it and put it on the market. And then it's like they got a garage full of it. And it's like, whoa. I mean, you know, they realize there's a lot of work involved here. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were going from store to store to store, you know, until we start getting some momentum. So the big advantage that I had, I guess, I got an early start. I mean, a rub was not a common thing in the South. We had to explain to people what it was, and then, oh, do you want to buy some? You know, but we got it off the ground. It's worked out, you know. And then a thing that's really kept us in business is our brand loyalty, because we got in early, because a lot of people tried it and liked it. They've been using it for a long time.
Right.
It's like they're not just going to abandon you just because there's a new flashy object over there. You know, this is part of their memories growing up. I had someone that was graduating college who said, every barbecue I remember from my uncles and my dad, they had butt rub. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a part of their life. You know, and so that's the thing that I'm grateful for I don't know. I mean, there's so much competition out there, and they're pulling away from the pie, but we're holding our own and even growing. But I think it's just because we've got an early start, we've got a foothold, and we've got some good brand loyal, good loyal customers that have stayed with us. And so we just do our thing, and I guess a lot of people will give it a try. and you'll probably see a lot of them, you know, start fading out.
Yeah, I think there's probably people we've had on this show that we talked about their stuff 3 or 4 years ago, and then we haven't heard from them. You know, not a lot of them, but a handful of them that stuck their toe in the water, so to speak. And then to get, like I said, to get retail shelf space, it's one thing to do it off a website and sell it out of that, but you still got to be able to prove it that the product is good. And the only way you do that is get it in people's hands.
One difference that I about my direction was that when I decided to do this, that was my job.
We're going to take another break. We're going to be back with Bad Byron Chisholm and his butt rub
story. That's one around.
There you go. Right after this. Mm-hmm. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and I have eaten, if you've ever looked at me, you know that, but I have eaten seafood all over the world, and I can tell you there's no place better than here in Oregon and our Dungeness crab. If you want to learn more about Oregon Dungeness crab, just go to OregonDungeness.org and find out how to cook it, how to catch it, where to buy it, and the sustainability of what they're doing there in the Oregon Crab Commission. Check it out.
This is an encore.
Welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with Ms. Whippin, and we've got Byron Chisholm with us today. Again, we would like to thank the folks at Painted Hills Natural Beef, beef the way nature intended. And drum roll, please. There, how's that? Oh, the band is off today. Sorry about that, Byron. We've got Trim Tabs Pig Powder. Barbecue Dry Rub was developed by barbecue aficionado Jim Tab, commonly known as Dad. To Leanne there, and it won the coveted
great
best
man.
I'm actually, after all this time, sorry I never met the man. Leanne has told me some great stories about him, and everybody we have on the show speaks so highly of him. This rub's been around for over 30 years, and now for a unlimited time only, you can go to pigpowder.com and Ms. Leanne will make sure you get your pig powder. Isn't that right?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
I ship it out personally.
She does, and?
It is all in my home, everywhere. I have coffee tables. Yeah.
You have storage units with the stuff in it? Yeah. You have everything like that. So go to pigpowder.com. Leanne will personally ship it to you. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you'll like that. And I also guarantee, not to meld the two together, but if you've never tried Byron's butt rub, you should try it too. I'll say this. There's two main rubs at my shelves. I've got a bunch of them that, because Leanne knows we get shipped a lot of stuff to try. But I've got Leanne's pig powder and I've got Byron's butt rub there. And those are my go-tos. Sorry.
So Byron, I'm going to tell you a story about my dad, and it has to do with the butt rub and the pig powder. So back when I was competing, I would combine the two in competition because, you know, yours is more salt and peppery and mine's a little sweet with heat. And so I told my dad one time I won a first in something. He goes, "What did you do?" And I said, "Well, I did a, you know, this percentage pig powder and this percentage butt rub." And he goes, "Oh my gosh." And I said, "And don't tell anyone." And then like a week later, he's like, "I've been telling everyone."
Like on a podcast.
And the funny part was he turned it into his secret recipe. Yeah. And it's kind of like it was a family or a dad and me joke for a long
really
time.
Cool.
But yeah, I did. Honestly, back in the day, I used your rub and the pig powder together, and I'd use different ratios depending on what meat I was using it on. And that's all true.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love that.
That's good. I could just hear it now. I hear your dad, Leanne. Yeah, we invented that stuff down around Saragossa back in, you know, 75 type thing that. It would be very good.
I just remember the first time I went to try in 1998, it was my first major contest. And it was just so overwhelming, all these teams, all these people.
Yeah.
And your dad was like the founder of the whole thing. It was such a beautiful setting. It's a great contest. And that was amazing experience. And I just wanted to meet your dad. I was so intimidated. I didn't get to meet him that first trip, but by the second time I went, he called me by my name, and it was so flattering. I'm like, you know who I am? that was awesome. I remember seeing the house, that one house that had a view of
the top of Piney. He was on top of the mountain.
Man, that was magical.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. God, you guys are making me jealous. I missed
I don't know
that.
What the hell I was doing up there. Maybe somebody forgot something. I don't know. I don't remember, but I remember going.
Carolyn and Gary used to stay with us, during the contests. And we always had the famous baked eggs, the following morning, Sunday morning, all the rituals. Yeah.
Well, I got invited there one day, and I'll just never forget that place. That was really amazing. Yeah.
Wow.
I was at the Jack last year, and of course, you always have the really nice party before. But I didn't know how involved you were with the international teams, because they come over here unequipped for the most part. And you have, it seems to me like you mentored at least, four or five teams, and they came in early and they spent time with you, and you were helping them out, and they were so appreciative. And how did you get so involved? I mean, I know you were doing international and you're right around the corner from the Jack, which makes it nice, but how did that happen?
Well, all right, in terms of when you fly to a contest and you show up with a couple of suitcases, I was telling Tuffy the other day, we were talking about that, and I'm like, that's the biggest challenge in barbecue. Because, we show up in 36-foot trailers with everything, and they got two suitcases. So it's really daunting to appear somewhere and you got all these world champions and all these – and you're supposed to – compete against them, and everything you brought was in your suitcase. So, especially with the internet and everything like that, I met a lot of them in my travels in Europe. And then through the Jack, Wayne and Bill, when the international teams were asking them where they can get things, they sent them to me. Fortunately, we've got like a group of people now that have joined in as ambassadors. And so we know ahead of time who's coming in. We've got an ambassador for each team, and we know what grills they've requested, and we do our best. A lot of them want barrels. Barrels is a big thing. So whatever grill they want, we're sometimes we want pellet cookers, sometimes we want offsets. So we start, there's a lot of people that are like, hey, I'll be glad to donate my equipment. So basically we start ahead of time figuring out what it is they want, and a lot of them will order their meat for them. They'll tell us what their specs are. So, I'll have a commercial refrigerator full of competition meat. I mean, it's a lot of work and stuff like that, but I'm excited to do that. I want to do that. I've been to international events, and I was counting on people to help me with equipment and meat and everything else. So I'm glad to give it back. I want them to have a good experience here. They're excited to be here. And I want them to have what they need so they feel like they can do an adequate job of competing and do their best work.
Mm-hmm. Commendable.
Byron, who's the person that had the biggest influence on you and your barbecuing?
Ooh. Huh. Wow. Man. I should email me that one. Let me think about that. Who's the biggest person that influenced me in barbecue? Well, I guess the guy who taught me how to barbecue.
Yeah.
My buddy Jim, man, he built my equipment. He taught me, he had this big old trailer, and I'll tell you a little quick story you might appreciate.
Sure.
So I'm looking for a place to rent, and I pulled into this parking lot and looked at the place. I'm like, it's real nice. And he flagged me down the parking lot. I saw this big old huge trailer of smoke everywhere. He says, hey, don't rush off. I got some bucks coming off. He says, well, they're looking pretty good. That it's gonna be delicious. So come on back. And I'm like, I grew up in Texas, man. I'm like, I didn't know what a butt was. I'm like, butts of what? What? But I love the hospitality, the gesture. So we came back and we decided, I decided to rent. So I was next door to him. And so he taught me all about barbecue. So I guess he was my biggest influence. And when I told him I like to get my own cooker, you know, we went and, to a scrapyard and we got everything that you, what are we looking for, Jim? I don't know, but I'll know when I find it. And, you know, everything was 11 cents a pound, you know? And so we put together this grill and I still got it to this day. It taught me how to barbecue. It gave me the vessel to fall in love with barbecue that started off this whole barbecue path that's been such an amazing gift to me. So I would say yes, Jim Norton, Alabama Cowboy. I don't know if that was his real name or not, because he then later told me that the law in Alabama was looking for him. He said he didn't do anything wrong, but I don't think he did. But they were looking for him, and he didn't want to go to jail. So he was living on a beach and teaching me to barbecue. That's what he was doing.
Hey, Byron, there's a lot of guys in these big cement buildings with Constantine wire across top. They never did anything wrong either. Fair if you right. ask him.
Yeah, like, maybe I just got to know him as a person. I think he was a victim of circumstance, but I don't know what happened. But he was gentle as a lamb. He was a good guy, a nice guy. And, you know, he was sure good to me. He like I said, taught me, built that grill, never charged me nothing. And I don't know. It's that relationship that spearheaded my life in barbecue. Mm-hmm. You know, 26 years now in the business, 21 years competing, all the events, all the travel, all the friends, the beauty and barbecue as far as it just keeps giving. And he, my relationship with him was what kickstarted that. And so I'm really grateful.
So my question is, did he try to teach you how to weld?
I've never been taught that. And
neither am I.
I'm usually really good at something or I suck. And that's probably in the suck category.
The first barbecue I ever had, this was way back in the late 70s. I had a guy that lived on one of the farms. He just cut a 55-gallon drum in half for me. It hadn't been used for anything, but I watched him. He just cut it in half and he welded these little brackets in there. And then he took this piece of stainless steel grating and he fit it and he cut it and there it was. And he built a stand, a little four-legged stand for me mm-hmm. on it. And that's the first one that I personally ever owned.
How about that?
Yeah. I understand what you're talking about, somebody doing that for you. Although Jim didn't know how to cook worth sour owl crap, but he could weld and he could use a torch. So that's how I got my first barbecue. It works out pretty good. We are going to take another break. You're listening to Barbecue Nation here on the USA Radio Networks and all the podcast platforms with Byron Chisholm today. And of course, Ms. Leanne is with us, and we'll all be back right after this. Don't go away. Hey, everybody, it's JT. You know, I talk about Painted Hills all the time. And we always say beef the way nature intended. But it's more than that, because each bite of Painted Hills will make your taste buds explode, put a big, bright smile on your face. And whoever is at your dinner table will have a big, bright smile on their face. And you can thank me for that later. Just go to PaintedHillsBeef.com and find out more. You won't regret it. Hey, everybody, JT here. I want to tell you about the Hammerstahl knives. Hammerstahl combines German steel with beautiful and functioning designs. They're part of the Heritage Steel Group, which also does their pots and pans. So go to heritagesteel.us. Check out the Hammerstahl knives. If you're really into cooking, I think you're really going to like them.
This is an encore.
Welcome back to the nation. We've got Byron Chisholm with us today. And real easy to reach out to us, by the way. Just go to barbecuenationjt.com, and then you can send us an email, and we'll answer it. I promise. At some point, we'll answer it. Ms. Leanne's awful busy right now, and And I'm trying to get the TV thing going for us here. So we're both pretty swamped, but we will return your message. We've got Byron Chisholm with us. If you've never tried any of Byron's butt rub, you should try it.
It just dawned on me.
What?
I have a story about Byron.
Okay.
We were filming a show called the Kingsford Barbecue Championship Series. And to me, it was before its time, but I thought it was one of the best barbecue shows ever. And what they did was they did a lot of things, but one of the things that you had to do is they would roll out whatever your category was, albeit an eel in a tank, and it was live. And so you had to kill whatever it was that you were going to cook. And I remember, Byron, didn't you have bullfrogs?
Yeah, you know, that actual experience is, I never
disturbing.
Really was asked to cook a lot more cooking shows after that. But that's when we went from them filming this barbecue into some drama.
Right.
And, you know, so, you know, they made us kill these bullfrogs and then cook the legs. And I was so disgusted with that. I couldn't get home soon enough. And I turned down. I didn't get asked that much, but I just saw where this is going.
I thought the concept was good. I mean, parts of it, I thought that was horrific. But I do remember that. I don't want to bring back a bad memory, but it is something I do remember. And so anyway, we'll drop that now.
Wait a minute. You opened the door there, Leanne. So what did you have to whack?
Me?
Yeah.
At lobsters. So it wasn't that difficult.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. But still, nevertheless, we had to. We used skewers, and my sister was on the show with me, and we had to take the skewer and jab it into its neck, into it like its spinal. Anyway, it was just it's as bad a story as Byron was saying, but yeah. So anyway, subject dropped.
Okay, all right, I'll let that go. What do you?
But overall, that was a good thing, because most of the categories were more standard and. I had some good memories from that weekend. It was an arena.
Yeah.
And I had some good success. I was doing okay. And I don't know how I did with the frogs, but I remember on the lobster, I was trying to boil on it. I didn't have enough time to do that. So I didn't get my lobster finished. That kicked me out of the contest. And
that's, you know, what happened to me. Yeah. So it was cool because on the first round, you could bring your own cooker. On the second round, we all had different cookers and we all had the same meats. The third round, the lobster, and they gave us La Cucina, whatever, those Mexican hog cookers. And I didn't get my lobster done. And they had celebrity chefs, and the French chef took my lobster out, and I was beating Fast Eddie and Ray Lampe at the time. I was way ahead of them. And he picks up the lobster and he throws it into the audience because they had a live audience. And he goes, lobster sushi. And that was it. I was done.
Yeah. I was right there with you. My lobster didn't get done either. But anyway, yeah. Well, anyway.
So Byron, what do you think of all the, there's quite a few shows on television. There's a lot of them in reruns and stuff. You know, they're still rerunning the original Pitmasters and things. But what do you think of the shows these days?
Yeah, I probably have not seen a lot of it, but I think that a lot of people, of course, they've been introduced to barbecue through this media, and they've been inspired. And then, of course, the barbecue boom. I always say when I was starting out in '97, you know, it was like being on the tarmac, and then, you know, the airplanes just rolling, and then at some point, you know, in the early 2000s, it lifts off. And it's still rising, you know, as far as the boom goes. And so the original thing that inspired a lot of people was the very early Food Network specials. They were just organic. They would show up at a contest and they would film people what they were doing in contests. Mm-hmm. And we got in several of those just by the right place, right time. And it for whatever reason, I seemed to do really good when they were around. So I got some early, real good promotion from just being at the right place, right time, and doing good that day, which it's hard to put in a business plan. So, but that was the beginning. And those early Food Network specials were so popular that it you know, that's what inspired some of the others to start, you know, the Barbecue All-Stars, Barbecue Championship Series, which later the Pitmasters, and then all the other shows. Man Fire Food is awesome. You know, there's just some good media out there telling people what we're doing in the barbecue world. And so, and that, and YouTube, Lord, all the videos and instructional things, you know, you can get a huge educational barbecue. You know, when I started, it was zero.
We didn't know anything. Yeah.
No, I mean, the books were written by people who didn't really know how to barbecue, and the barbecuers didn't write books. That would change over time. But there was, if you want to figure out how to be a competition grade barbecue cook, you need to dive in there, figure it out. Because you might have a few people give you a few pointers here and there, but in the end, you just got to pay attention to what you're doing and make it better. Use your imagination. And I think a lot of natural born cooks were some of the early champions. And now you don't really have to be that talented. You can just get the right information and be real organized and replicate something that's competitive. So that's a different deal. I think that the original artists were the ones that were creating their own way. And that's the way it was when I started. And now a lot of people are okay with doing cover songs, you know?
Yeah.
If it's a good enough cover song, then they can win with it. That's okay.
What about the flavor profiles? They've obviously changed a bit.
I don't know, man. It's not really my game anymore. I'm going back to more real historical traditional things.
Byron, we're going to get out of here, but you're going to stick around for after hours. That's where we torment Leanne. So you'll have a lot of fun there with that.
off the record.
Yeah, but real quick, real quick, if people don't have your butt rub in their local area, how can they find it? Can they buy it online from you, or can they?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, buttrub.com, we've got a store there. We're in Amazon, of course. And also on our website, you know, we have our stores listed, the different grocery outlets and things that carry our product.
Okay, very good. Byron Chisholm from.
And congratulations on the Hall of Fame.
Yes. Well deserved. So yes.
Well, it's a true honor.
Not mentioning that, but my bad. All right, we're going to get out of here. Byron's going to stick around for after hours. And until next week, everybody, remember our motto, turn it, don't burn it. Take care, be kind, and go have some fun.
Barbecue Nation is produced by JTSD LLC Productions in association with Salem Media Group. All rights reserved.